fellow club members here today, and our guests in the audience, as well as those of you who are listening to this program over one of the 303 national public radio stations or watching on one of the 1,900 cable systems affiliated with C-SPAN, the Cable Satellite Public Affairs Network. Before going any further, I'd like to remind our members of some upcoming events. Next week, our luncheon guests will be Coretta Scott King on Wednesday, September the 18th, and Geraldine Ferraro on Friday, September the 20th. Other guests this month are Melina Mercury on September 23rd and Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman John Shad on the 24th. Next month, the Prime Minister of Singapore, Lee Kuan Yew, will be our speaker on October 10th, and Texas Commissioner of Agriculture, John Hightower, the poet laureate of the Democratic Party, will be with us on October 17th. I'd like to remind those of you in the audience today that if you have any questions for our speaker today, and I expect that you will, please write them on the cards furnished you at the tables. Pass them up to me. I'll ask as many as time allows. I'd like now to introduce the guests at our head table. Ask our guests please to stand briefly when their names are read, and would you in the audience please withhold your applause until I've read all the names. My left, your right, William Beecher of the Boston Globe, Shin Sasaki, Kyoto News Service, Norman Kempster of the Los Angeles Times, Maureen Santini of the Associated Press, Kenneth Sidman, National Coordinator for the Kach Political Party, Catherine Kaler of Newhouse News Service, Chairman of the Press Club's Speakers Committee, Alan Fotheringham, Southam News Service, Rabbi Herzl Krantz, Rabbi of Silver Spring, Maryland Jewish Center, Lars Eric Nelson of the New York Daily News, and William Johnson, the Toronto Globe and Mail, member of today's of the Speakers Committee, who organized today's luncheon. Not everyone loves Rabbi Meir Kahane, today's guest speaker at the National Press Club. Some have called this elected member of Israel's legislature, the Knesset, a racist. Some have compared his proposal to remove Arabs from Israel to the Nazi obsession with ridding Germany of Jews. Last Sunday, the president of Israel, Chaim Herzog, said this of Rabbi Kahane, quote, "I think it's a disgrace to the Jewish people, and that is how it looks to the whole world that a person could rise in the Jewish state and present a program that is very similar to the Nuremberg laws." For those younger members of our audience, the Nuremberg laws passed by Hitler in 1935 deprived Jews, including all persons who were one-quarter Jewish, of the rights of citizenship, and they prohibited the marriage of Jews and non-Jews. Rabbi Kahane is the founder of the political party Kach, and his platform includes the following. Intermarriage between Jews and non-Jews in Israel would be forbidden by law. Jews married to non-Jews in Israel would be forbidden from holding public office. The immediate annexation of all the territory that Israel has conquered and the expulsion of the Arabs there. The removal of Arabs and Arab mosques from the Temple Mount. He would also seek to have Jewish-controlled municipalities, communities, and firms in Israel to fire their Arab employees and hire only Jews. The Knesset expressed its feeling this summer when it voted 60-0 to outlaw any political party from participating in Israeli elections if it incites racism, rejects Israel's democratic equality before the law, or tries to turn the state of Israel into an exclusively Jewish state. Yet for all of this, polls have shown that Rabbi Kahane's support is increasing in Israel, particularly among non-European Jews and the young. The recent rise of terrorism within Israel and the fear that Jews could become a minority within Israel because of the higher Arab birth rates have given more credence to his views. In July, polls showed that Kach would have elected 5 to 10 members in the 120-member Knesset. At some of his rallies, people will cry, Kahane, king of Israel. So who is this man who is so hated by some and so loved by others? Meir Kahane, born in Brooklyn in 1932, is the son of a rabbi. He completed rabbinical studies himself at Mir Yeshiva and obtained a law degree from the New York University Law School. His first of innumerable arrests came in 1947 when, as a 15-year-old, he threw rocks at the car of British Foreign Minister Ernest Bevin. In 1968, he founded the Militant Jewish Defense League and remained its international chairman until last month. He moved to Israel in 1971 and was elected to the Knesset in July of last year. I give you Rabbi Meir Kahane.
Thank you, Mr. Hess, members of the dais, members of the press club, and guests. For 2,000 years, the Jewish people in exile dreamed a dream. The Jew in Poland and the Jew in Yemen, the Jew in Germany and in Morocco dreamed a dream that they called Shivat Zion, the return to Zion. A people that had been promised the land by God to a man called Abraham, who was told, "Get thee from thy father's house and from thy father's land, and go to the land that I shall show you." A people that lived in that land and created two states that had kings who reigned and prophets who prophesied, were driven from that land by the Romans. And not one day passed in those 20 centuries in which the Jew did not pray three times a day, "V'techezena einenu b'shuvcha l'tzion," "May our eyes behold thy return to Zion." That is Zionism. It was not Theodor Herzl who created Zionism. It was Theodor Herzl's great-great-grandfather, who stood by the rivers, and you can fill in the name of the country, the rivers of tears of France or of Germany or of England, and said, "Someday we will come home. Someday we will return home." We came home in 1948. We returned. We didn't come as settlers. We returned as the legal owners of a Jewish state, of a Jewish state which includes Judea and Samaria. If we have no right to Hebron in Judea, then we certainly have no right to Tel Aviv. Abraham never walked on Dizengoff Street in Tel Aviv, but he surely lived and is buried in Hebron. And our claim to a Tel Aviv, which was built in 1905, is only a valid one if we have a claim to Hebron. So for those who say that Israel needs Judea and Samaria for reasons of defense, that may be true, but that's not the reason. The reason why we should not give up one inch is an eminently ethical one. It belongs to us. There is a specter haunting Israel: Kahanism. The president of Israel, Chaim Herzog, the one who found nothing remiss or amiss last summer in sitting with members of the Israeli Communist Party, or the two members of the pro-PLO party, but would not sit with Kahane, says that what Meir Kahane says is outrageous, racism, Nazism. He's the son of the late chief rabbi. "I tell you that if what I say is racism, his father was a racist too." What Meir Kahane says is not Kahanism, it is Judaism. And it may be a painful thing, especially for Jews in the West, to to suddenly learn that Judaism is not precisely Thomas Jefferson or Burke. It isn't. Judaism is a very, very different kind of concept. We have reformed it unto death, conservated it unto death, and reconstructed it unto death. But the Judaism that is in this country is not Judaism. It's a garment center cut. We have created God in our own image. Moshe Tamam. I would wager that that name means absolutely nothing to a single person sitting in this room. But Moshe Tamam is one of the reasons why I intend, with God's help, to reach power and to transfer the Arabs out of Israel. Moshe Tamam was a 19-year-old soldier who was killed. He was not killed in Lebanon. And he was not killed in the occupied territories. Moshe Tamam was a 19-year-old soldier who hitched a ride 9 kilometers from Netanya, in the heart of the state of Israel, within the green lines that King Hussein would have us go back to. He was murdered by Arabs, by Israeli Arabs. Let me tell you what they did to him. They gouged out his eyes and they cut off his sexual organs. If you want to know why my support comes mostly from Sephardic Jews, Jewish Arab countries, it's because they never learned about Arabs at Georgetown or at Hebrew University. They lived with Arabs. They lived under Arabs. They never again wanted to do that. They are the last normal people, untouched by college professors. If you want to know what they would do to us if they could, look what they do to themselves every day in Lebanon. If you want to know what they would do to us if they could, look what they did to us when they could in the 1920s and 1930s. In the 1920s and 1930s, there was no Kahana. There was no Begin, no Sharon, none of these fascists. Indeed, there was not even a Jewish state. And for some reason, the Arabs rioted year after year and massacred hundreds and hundreds of Jews. And who speaks of the massacre in Hebron in 1929? And in Jerusalem in 1920, and in Jaffa in 21. Who speaks of these things? Well, I do. Because I'll never forget the past, lest I see to it that it is repeated in the future. I don't hate Arabs. I love Jews. And I wish the Arabs well elsewhere. I want to pose the question which will give you an understanding of why they hate me so, the Jews in Israel. Because with this question, with these points, I touch the most sensitive of all nerves, the contradiction between Judaism, Zionism, and Western democracy. The state of Israel was created as a Jewish state. Indeed, in the Declaration of Independence of Israel, it states, "Anu machrizim bezot al hakamat medina yehudit." We hereby proclaim the creation of a Jewish state. The declaration declares a Jewish state. What does that mean? What is the minimal definition, if not a state with a majority of Jews? Only in that way can we be masters of our fate, captains of our ship. We lived long enough as a minority. We enjoyed all the benefits of the Crusades and the Inquisitions and the pogroms and the Auschwitzes, large and small. And so we decided, no, thank you, but never again, and this time we'll have our state, and that means a majority. The same Declaration of Independence, a schizophrenic document if ever there was one, proceeds to say, equal political rights for all people, Jews, Arabs. That's democracy. Now I put the question to each and every one here. In theory, do the Arabs have a right? Not to war, to peace, to democracy, to coexistence. Do they have a right to suddenly say, we shall make love, not war? Do they have a right to become the majority? Peacefully. If you're a Democrat, of course they have. If you're a Zionist, of course they don't. Is there a contradiction? Of course there is. And for 37 years, the leaders of Israel, and of course, the American Jewish leaders, the pygmies and the dwarfs that oppress the American Jew, have avoided this. They fled from this in terror, in panic. They don't want to have to answer it, because if they answer yes, they have a right, then they're anti-Zionist. If they say no, they have no right, then they're Meir Kahane, except backward. Of course there's a problem. It's a tremendous problem. It's not a happy question. I touch the most sensitive of all nerves. I have no problems. I have no guilt. Unfortunately, too many Jews live with an obsessive guilt. Most people breathe oxygen. Too many Jews breathe guilt. I have no guilt feelings. It's better to be a winner than a loser. It's better to live than die. It's better to have a Jewish state that is hated by the whole world than an Auschwitz that's loved by it. I make absolutely no apologies for the fact that I am not prepared to lose my country either to Arab bullets or to Arab babies. They have 22 countries, and I wish them well. I truly do. But I have only one country, and I will not lose that country in any way. I want an exchange of populations. In 1948, Israel took in 800,000 Jews from Arab countries. That was phase one. I now want phase two. We took in the Jews. Let us give them our Arabs. In very much the same way that the Greeks and Turks exchanged over 2 million people in the 1920s. In very much the same way that there was a de facto exchange of 18 million people between Pakistan and India in 1947. And shall I even discuss the expulsion of 12 million ethnic Germans by the Czechs and the Poles after 1945? An expulsion which was ratified at Potsdam by Harry Truman, by Clement Attlee, and Joseph Stalin. To even begin to compare what I want to Hitler is an obscenity. The German Jews, did the German Jew get up and say, this country is really mine, and the Germans have taken it from me, and when I become the majority, I will take it from them and call it Israel? Of course not. The German Jew wanted nothing more than to be the best German who ever lived. The Arab in Israel does not want to be a Jew or an Israeli. Is there one person in this room who has such contempt for the Arabs that he believes that the Arabs enjoy living in a state which has a law of return which applies to Jews only, a law that was passed not by Meir Kahane, but by the Labor Party? Is there one person in this room who has such contempt for Arabs that he believes that when the Arab rises to sing his national anthem, what is his national anthem? The Jewish national anthem, with these words, Nefesh Yehudi, Omiya, the soul of a Jew yearns. Can you imagine how that grabs him? Is there one person who has such contempt for Arabs that he believes that on Independence Day in Israel, the Arab rushes out to celebrate his defeat? I don't have contempt for Arabs, because I have national pride. And I can understand others who have national pride. They believe that we are thieves. They're wrong. But I understand them. I understand the Arabs, and they understand me. And neither of us can begin to understand Jewish leaders. I'm a rabbi. I believe in God, a real God, not the modern concept of God who is a spirit within man like indigestion. There was a real God, a transcendental being who made us and not we who thought him. I believe in a God who appeared at Mount Sinai and gave us a law and who gave us a truth And I'm not a racist. A racist is one who says people who are different than I are permanently less than I am. If one wishes to become Jewish and a convert, will I not welcome him, and will she not be as much a Jew as Mayor Kahana? The dream of 2,000 years is here. I have no intention of losing it. And those people in the streets of Israel who shout, Kahana Melech Yisrael, King of Israel, are not mobs. They're people who are pained. There are people who see Jews killed every single week inside Israel. There are people who see a vacillating government, a weak government, a government that has no answers, and someone comes and says what they think. No apologies, ever. We owe the world nothing. And we don't want anything from that world. Leave us alone. Let us build our state. I don't want anyone's love. I want respect. And the only way that I'll ever get respect is by having self-respect. And that I have. That I have. I wish the Arabs well. With God's help, I will be the Prime Minister. And with God's help, the Arabs, I hope, will live happily elsewhere. And with God's help, we will bring the Messiah. Thank you.
And now for the questions. Rabbi Kahana, do you think that with your approach to the Israeli-Arab problem, peace will ever truly come about there?
I believe that with the approach of Abba Ibn to the Arab-Israel problem, peace will never come. The fact of the matter is that only little children think that every problem has a solution. When you mature, you learn that certain problems are exceedingly, excruciatingly difficult. Now, I have an instant answer if you want peace. I have an instant, in fact, I may form a new group tomorrow called Peace Instantly. My solution is quite simple. Give up Israel. That is the solution. You'll have peace. You'll also have perhaps another Auschwitz. That's not my answer. There will not be peace. And I say that sadly. More sadly than the person who wrote that question, because I'm sure that he doesn't live in Israel. And I do, and I serve in the army. And my son is in the army. And I don't want either of us to be in an army. But if that's the price of keeping our state after 2,000 years, I am more than willing to pay that price.
The United States appears to be on the verge of a meeting with a Jordan Palestinian joint delegation. Do you expect that such a meeting would have the result of leading to direct negotiations between the Arab states and Israel?
It's very, very difficult to know what the Arabs will do with themselves. I don't know what this means. A delegation made up of who? One day Arafat says one thing, the other, and the next day there is a denial. I don't believe that there is such a thing as an Arab moderate. I think that there are two kinds of Arabs. Those who say what they mean, and those who don't. The Syrians, the Libyans say what they mean. Throw the Jews into the sea. They're extremists. The moderate, in the end, wants the same thing. An end to Israel. But he doesn't say it. And he's clever. I don't know what will happen. I'm not a prophet. I only like to talk about things that I can know. I don't believe that much will come of it. But who knows? We didn't believe that much would come out of Egypt. A lot came out of it. Most of it terrible. I don't believe that there is an Arab leader who will ever agreed to a peace, even a bogus peace, without Israel giving up all of the liberated lands, including the eastern half of our capital city. I don't believe that there's a Jew in Israel who will accept that. I hope not. I don't believe in this kind of a peace. I want peace. At our present borders, let's have peace. Even with Jordan, which is an illegal country, a product of a violation by the British of the League of Nations mandate, that I'm basically moderate, so I'll accept the peace with them.
What religious liberty are you willing to extend to religious minorities in an Israeli state run by a majority of Jews? Is the only liberty you are willing to extend is for them to leave Israel?
I said earlier that I'm an Orthodox rabbi, and I am bound by Jewish law. If the Arabs of Israel would be willing to live with their personal rights and not their national rights, meaning if they would not have the national rights of voting, then I would be ready to allow them the entire gamut of personal rights, their religious rights totally, their cultural rights, their economic rights, social rights. If they're ready to accept that, let them live in Israel. But I have greater respect for the young Arab than most Jews. I don't believe that there are two young Arabs under the age of 40 who would accept that. But if they are, that's my offer to them.
Do you expect a United States government would support an Israel in which you were the prime minister? Does Israel need such support?
I think one of the constant warnings in 1977 of Shimon Peres in the election campaign was, if God forbid Menachem Begin won the election, would America support an Israel headed by Menachem Begin? But they did. They did. America doesn't back Israel because there is a love affair between Ronald Reagan and Shimon Peres. America, hopefully, backs countries out of national interest. That's the only reason, national interest. If America believes that Israel is not to its national interest, it should immediately stop supporting Israel, immediately. If it believes that Israel is to its national interest, if it believes that it is important that the Israelis fly F-16 jets in real combat and point out the weaknesses, if they believe it is important that they show them what a Soviet T-72 tank looks like, if they show them how they put out the Soviet missiles so that we knock down 82 Syrian planes with a loss of nothing, if they believe that it's important that there be a strong anti-Soviet country, an ally in that region, then they should back us. If not, then don't back us. Above all, I'm still the same rabbi. The state of Israel will never go under. It came into being because of God, and it will continue. And I tell the Americans, if you are believers, then know that on Judgment Day, God will ask you, did you support Israel when it needed you? And indeed, the question is, will America survive without Israel?
Rabbi Kahane, do you think American Jews are afraid of you? And if so, why?
There's no such thing as American Jews. Each one is the individual par excellence. There are American Jewish leaders who are all of the same cut. In fact, they aren't people, they are concepts. Yes, the American Jewish leader is terrified of Mayor Kahane. Because when he gets up at the National Press Club or on 60 Minutes and throws out the question, Mr. Bookbinder or Mr. Blumberg or Mr. What have you, do the Arabs have a right to be a majority, yes or no? Do you opt for Western democracy or for Zionism? That's the last question in the world that they want you to hear. Of course they're terrified, because suddenly if the New York Times has a page one article about Kahane, and 60 Minutes will have something about Kahane, and it doesn't really matter to me what kind of a hatchet job Wallace does. That's not important. The point is that they realize that something is happening inside Israel. and that their efforts over all these years to say, well, Kana has no support, some kind of a lunatic fringe, suddenly that's not so. If 2 weeks ago, the latest poll in Israel shows elections would now give the Kach movement 11 seats, of course that terrifies them. Can you imagine their blackest nightmare, having to be at Washington Airport to greet Prime Minister Kahana?
You say, quote, I have only one country, unquote, and yet you are striving to keep your American citizenship. How do you justify this apparent contradiction?
It is apparent. I'm a dual citizen. I live in Israel. I believe that a person should not be a dual citizen, and I would have long since given it up if I did not fear, and with justification, that if I gave it up, the American government would place great obstacles in my path in attempting to obtain a visa to enter America for lecture tours. I have a great deal to say to Jews in this country. I want to save them from their Jewish leaders. I want to say things that they don't hear. I want to warn them, for example, of a possible tragedy that could happen to the American Jew here. And not to fall prey to this nonsense, it couldn't happen here. If, God forbid, there would be a terrible economic crash in this country, a very, very bad one, a severe one, and certainly one who is honest enough to look at the economic truth of a country which is approaching the $2 trillion national debt, whose banking system is beset with all kinds, not bad debts, impossible debts. I don't know what would happen here. The Germans certainly were not evil people. They weren't devils. They were as decent or indecent as anyone else. And they chose Hitler because of a terrible crash, an economic crash, the unraveling of the social fabric. I'm afraid for Jews. I want them to live in Israel. At least I want them to think about this. I want them to stop thinking that when they go to a dinner of the National Conference of Christians and Jews, that's where to hear the truth about what people think about Jews. That's not true. If I had my way, I would compel every Jewish leader in Washington to go to a bar every night for a week. Not a trendy bar. Bar. And listen, as the whiskey goes in, what sometimes comes out. That's the only reason why I haven't given up the citizenship. However, there is a bill in Knesset by my enemies which will force me, when it passes, which will probably be sometime in the fall, to give it up. And at that time, I will. And hopefully the American government will allow me in. Just one further point on this. It never bothered anyone in Knesset the years that Moshe Aarons sat in the Knesset and was a dual citizen.
The exchange of Pakistanis and Indians and Greeks and Turks was accompanied by massive rioting and killings. How do you propose that Israel affects such an exchange of Jews and Arabs without this kind of turmoil? And if that is not possible, do you believe those deaths would be worth the result?
I don't want to kill anyone. I know that if the Arabs stay, in a very short time, Israel will become a Northern Ireland, certainly in the Galilee, where they already are a majority. I don't think that the situation of India, Pakistan, and that of Israel are comparable. Those are two countries that were just coming into being. There was no central government, really. There was anarchy. In Israel, we are speaking about a country which has a government, a central government, a strong army, and above all, if Meir Kahana would be the prime minister and offer the Arabs the following choice: you are going to leave. However, the choice is leave willingly with full compensation for all your property, which is more than you did for the Sephardic Jews, the 800,000 Jews who fled your countries. Or if you're not ready to leave, I'll throw you out without a penny. They have a perception of strength or of weakness. And those of you who may have been in Israel in 1977 when Mr. Begin won, recall that the Arabs sat in abject terror for 2 months. They were convinced that Begin was Begin. He wasn't. We didn't know that either. Kahana will always be Kahana. I doubt very, very strongly if the transfer of Arabs from Israel will lead to anything remotely similar to the rioting and the violence which took place in India and Pakistan.
How can the Israeli economy grow at the required rate without the Arab labor segment?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I want to add to it and expand on it. First of all, how can Israel keep on going in its present form? We're a beggar. We are a basket case. Our hand is held out every single year. I raise mine eyes onto Washington. From Congress shall come forth my salvation. That's no way to exist. The best thing that the American government would ever do for Israel would be to withhold economic aid and force us to live as we should, not like Rothschilds importing color TV sets, German cars. Let us cut our living standards and let us learn to work hard. Take the bureaucrats and throw them into the sea. Bring in private enterprise. There are countless Jews and non-Jews who are willing to invest in Israel. Not only because they want to help Israel, but because they want to make profit. And they have every right to do so. But you have to go through the seven circles of Jewish hell. A permit here and a permit there and a permit this and a permit. And of course they would much, much rather go to Taiwan. Jewish labor. In our platform, we have a proposal that in the first 3 years of army service, in the second year, every Jewish soldier, no matter who he is, will be compelled to learn a physical trade. Every single soldier. And in the third year, every soldier will be sent home, but he's still in the army, and every morning he must report to the labor exchange and work. And we'll teach them to work again. And that was the original dream of Zionism, to become a normal people. Not every Jew has to be a PhD. We'll create a Jewish state, a normal one, and a Jewish one.
What is the status of your American citizenship now? Has the U.S. State Department put any pressure on you to relinquish your American passport?
At this moment, I am a dual citizen. Under U.S. law, and as stated in the Ephraim versus Russ case, a U.S. citizen cannot lose his citizenship unless he gives it up. And it's not just for Israel, any country. So one can be a dual citizen, and there are countless people in this country who are dual citizens. I really forgot the other question. Yes. I have not heard from any official in the U.S. government, from anyone, since August of 1984. One of the problems with the news media is that it doesn't always give an accurate picture. It's not true that I've been pressured. I haven't heard from them. I've received neither their kudos or their pressures. I haven't heard a word from them. I would assume that they're probably relying on the Israeli Knesset to do for them what would be more difficult for them to do.
Rabbi Kahane, what would have to happen within Israeli society for you to have any chance of realizing your dream of becoming prime minister?
My greatest dream is not having to become the prime minister. Because my strength grows tragically in proportion to the killings, the the attacks, the bombings, the murder of Jews. My greatest dream would be tomorrow for those things to stop. And then I wouldn't be the prime minister. What would have to happen? That's what would have to happen for them to continue. And I say this with a heavy heart. They continue and they grow worse. And why shouldn't they? In the face of an Israeli government which incredibly, impossibly, releases 1,100 terrorists, murderers. Why should an Arab terrorist not murder Jews? What's the worst that can happen? He'll be arrested. He'll be sentenced to 5 life sentences, which is a very, very serious kind of sentence. He might be, after all, he might have only been given 4. The Arabs will kidnap, will capture 3 soldiers, and he's freed. It will continue, and I say this with a heavy heart, and that's why I'm coming to power. My greatest dream is not having to come to power, and not a single Jew or Arab being murdered.
What would be your strategy if you and your party were barred from participating in the next Israeli elections?
Well, clearly there is a law that has been passed recently in the Knesset, a law which has been praised by every hypocritical liberal, who, if such a law would be introduced in Congress, would see the American Jewish Congress and the B'nai B'rith and the American Jewish Committee climbing walls. It is such a terrible law. And by the way, the description of it was not entirely an accurate one. First of all, it's a law that bans parties from running on the grounds that they are racist, and then proceeds not to define racism at all in the bill. See what a dangerous bill that is? Who wouldn't vote for a bill that is anti-racist? Of course I am anti-racist in every fiber of my body. But what does rate racism mean? There's not the slightest attempt, and it is a deliberate thing. There is no effort made to define racism. Secondly, let me tell you what else is in that bill which makes it not only a bad bill but a joke. It also bans a party which negates the democratic character of Israel, and here is where the error was made. And thirdly, it negates any party which it bars any party which negates the Jewish character of the state. Incredible. What a contradiction. We are members of the Elections Committee, and at its first meeting in October, I intend to poll every single party and see to it that every party in Israel is banned. If a party states that it is a Zionist party which affirms the Jewish character of Israel, I will move that it be banned on the grounds that it negates the democratic character of Israel, which would allow Arabs to be a majority. If it affirms the democratic character of Israel, I'll move that it be barred under the section which demands that you affirm the Jewish character of Israel. It is such an insanely amateurish law. The Talmud says that hatred blinds a person. Yes, indeed. It blinded an entire Knesset. I won't be barred. If I'm barred, like De Gaulle, I'll go home and wait for the people to call me.
You say the best thing the United States could do for Israel would be to cut off foreign aid. By the same token, would Kach be willing to forego contributions, voluntary, from U.S. citizens?
I would certainly maintain that aid is needed from fellow Jews for a reason. It is imperative that every Jew living outside of Israel know that he has a tie to the Jewish state, that he has an obligation to help the Jewish state, and by the same token, the Jewish state has an obligation to help Jews elsewhere. I don't accept the concept of Soviet Jews. There are Jews who happen to live in the Soviet Union. I don't accept the concept of Syrian Jews. There are Jews who happen to live in Syria. And I don't accept the concept of an American Jew. He's a Jew who lives in the U.S. It's imperative that he feels the obligation to help the Jewish state. Because for so many Jews, they're only tied to anything Jewish is a check to the UJA. At least that.
If, as you have said, democracy is incompatible with Judaism, what form of government would you establish in Israel if you became the prime minister?
Of course I would want there to be a Torah state, a state based upon Jewish law. Of course. Find me one Orthodox rabbi in the world who would not want that. The difference is that I say it, and they're afraid. Most unpopular thing to say. You make that kind of a statement, and immediately 15 Jews jump up and say, Khomeini. Long before there was an Islam, there was a Judaism. We beat him to the punch. Nevertheless, I am not prepared to impose a Torah state against the majority will of the Jewish people. I will never go to civil war against Jews, ever. And therefore, because we have no choice, we are prepared to have a democracy, a democratic state, for every Jew living in Israel. Not because I'm happy about it. Because if I believe that God gave me truth, it's not exactly the most logical thing to say now every 4 years we'll vote on whether we should have it. Nevertheless, I'm not prepared ever to impose a minority rule on Israel. That will not be. I'll never lift my hand against a Jew. I'll never certainly start such a thing. So we are for democracy, for the Jewish people, and the state of Israel.
You said that the Bible granted Israel Judea and Samaria and cited specifically the tomb of Abraham in Hebron. Why then do the Palestinians have no claim to the coastal plain of Philistia, which was only under Israeli or biblical occupation at the height of Solomon's empire?
Well, I don't know. You know, I must tell you that people throw facts around. The prophet Jonah took a ship from Jaffa, which is on the coastal plain, Philistia. Jonah lived many, many years after Solomon. People who throw around these things, and of course, implicit in this question is that Philistia and the Arabs of Palestine are the same people. Well, that's not really so. And I certainly have no intention of arguing with them. I believe that the claim of the Jewish people to the land of Israel is a biblical claim, and the boundaries are set out clearly there. I really have no intention of debasing myself, because the same people who don't recognize the Jewish claim to Hebron don't recognize the Jewish claim to any part of Israel, really. When I hear Jewish members of Peace Now or the establishment here say, the obstacle to peace is the occupied lands of 1967, I sometimes suddenly realize, of course, that's the answer. Why didn't I realize it before? I always ask myself, what did the Arabs want in 1947 when they turned down the UN partition plan, which would have created a tiny, grotesque little Jewish state? And I never knew why. And I suddenly realized, of course, the reason why they went to war in 1947 was the occupied lands of 1967. Of course. And that's why they went to war in 1956. And that's why they killed 510 Jews between 1936 and 38. Hebron, the coastal plain. There's not an Arab who doesn't believe that both are his. And I respect him for it, because I believe the same. They're both mine.
What is your view, Rabbi Kahane, of the American Ambassador Murphy's efforts to get the peace talks in the Middle East restarted?
I'm always ready to speak with anyone. I differ with a government which says we should never speak with the PLO. Because when you say we'll never speak with the PLO, what you're doing is you're setting up a straw man. You're saying they're bad Arabs, but there are good Arabs. I think that all Arabs are good Arabs, in the sense that all of them want what's best for their people, meaning Israel. So I'm ready to speak with anyone and tell them, no, I'm not going to give up the territory. You want peace? We'll sit down. You take Jordan. What is Jordan? A fictitious, illegal state. Call it Palestine. I don't care what you call it. Call it Disneyland. I don't care what you call it. Have it as your state. 80% of the people living there are Palestinians. Well, I would be ready to speak with anyone. Because essentially, Ellis Frege, the mayor of Bethlehem, and Arafat really both want the same thing. It's just that Frege is so much more clever.
Would you please explain why the United States should support Israel if Israel became overtly and publicly non-democratic?
Well, but Israel would not become non-democratic. It would be a democratic state for its Jewish citizens. It would not be a state which will allow people who don't recognize it really to take it from us. I can't begin to grasp people, if they're honest. Do you really believe that Israel should sit back and, in theory, allow the Arabs to become a majority and take it from us? Do you believe that if 61 Arabs sit in that Knesset, that they will continue to allow a state to be one which has a law of return that applies to Jews only and not Arabs? You have to have some kind of a modicum of respect for the Arabs. Therefore, I would hope that the American citizen who over the last 8 years has become much more sane and much more normal, and who realizes what self-interest is finally, and who is hopefully reversing the trend to national suicide which marked this country ever since the war in Vietnam, hopefully he will understand that Israel is not going to commit suicide in the name of some bogus democracy. Democracy for all Jews of the Jewish state. That will be the democratic Jewish state.
Rabbi Abba Ibn and Yossi Sarid, among other Knesset members, seem to favor ceding Judea, Samaria, East Jerusalem, the Golan, and the Gaza Strip in return for peace. If Ibn or Sarid becomes prime minister and embarks on withdrawal of Israeli control from nearly all of those areas, what would the Kach movement do? Would it contemplate something as drastic as armed revolt?
Before Yossi Sarid became the prime minister, the Messiah would come twice. However, as a hypothetical question, I'll give you a hypothetical answer. If conceivably there would be a prime minister of Israel who would agree to Israel going back to a state which is 10 miles wide, and I live in Israel, know that my children and my grandchildren will be at the mercy of the people who made fools out of Sarid and Abba Ibn. We will launch a campaign of massive civil disobedience. And so that someday, I may go down in history as Dr. Martin Luther King. It's amazing the inconsistency. You are allowed to break laws if you like the cause. You don't like people breaking laws if you don't like their cause. There is no way that the people of Israel will ever allow any government to give up all of those lands, ever. Know that. And I state this as a Knesset member. A call for civil disobedience call for soldiers not to obey orders, just as the leftists did in Lebanon. Over 200 Jewish soldiers did not obey orders. And everyone thought that that was a wonderful thing, an ethical concept. People who stood by what they believed. Fine. I learned a great deal in the last year about democracy in Israel. And I've learned what you are supposed to do for an ideal. Well, I'll do the same for mine. No one will ever, no government will ever have the power to give up the West Bank, ever.
Rabbi, how does what you are proposing differ from what the South African government is doing to the blacks there? How does this square with the Jewish code of ethics?
I thought that I had begun my speech by answering that without mentioning South Africa. The Jews have come back to their country. The white settlers came to South Africa. And whether that particular area had Zulus in it or didn't have Zulus in it, they were strangers and foreigners and colonists coming to a strange country. There's a comparison here. We've come back to our country. There isn't a Baptist Bible believer that 60 years ago knew of the Palestinians. He knew of the Jewish people. There are no Palestinians. The name Palestine was invented by the Roman Emperor Hadrian, who, after crushing the revolt of the Jews, determined to eradicate the very memory of the Jewish state. And so he changed the name of the country, Judea, to Palestina, after the Philistines. That's where this came from. What if he hadn't done that? What if he had kept the name Judea? Would we now be fighting the Judean terrorists? I must tell you, in the few seconds that I have left, the Jewish state, the Jewish people, the Jewish destiny is run by God. And with God's help, we will not give in. And by doing that which he wants on the eve of the Jewish New Year, hopefully he will give us that which we want.
Rabbi Kahane, before you leave, I'd like to present you with a certificate of appreciation from the club for coming and a paperweight with the emblem of the National Press Club.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. And that concludes today's National Press Club luncheon. Sorry, I had to cut you off.
Oh, just put it right on the wrong year.